Welcome to Local SEO Today. On this podcast, John Vong interviews business professionals and entrepreneurs in many fields to uncover challenges and successes in business ownership. Our goal is to provide you with insights into the entrepreneurship journey and give you tips and advice from real experience. Brought to you by Local SEO Search, based in Toronto, Canada.
Today's guest on Local SEO Today is Greg Weatherden. Greg understands what it takes to succeed as an entrepreneur. He started as a long-haul truck driver and then moved into packaged goods and media businesses. Greg is a sought-after speaker and business advisor. He has a book, Get More Life Out of Your Business, which is a must-read for entrepreneurs. Thank you for being here with us, Greg.
This is a great pleasure, John. Roger, I absolutely look forward to having this chat.
Terrific.
Awesome. So I just want to get started and welcome you. I know you're a busy gentleman. You're very sought after. So for me, I want to appreciate thanking you for being on our show. So before we start, so tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, I know your expertise and profession currently, but how did you get to where you are today?
You know what, it was probably a long journey. I won't bore everybody with the details, but I think the seeds were set when I was very young. You know, I had the paper for 7 years. I shoveled snow, people's driveways. I cut lawns. I think those were the genesis of my entrepreneurial start. I never really thought of being an entrepreneur until I was much older. But once I left university or college that I tried to go to for a while, it wasn't my cup of tea. I set off on my careers at that point. I was a truck driver. And again, it was something that I enjoyed doing. I aspired to drive long haul tractor trailer, which I got to do. And fortunately, ended up touring long haul or rock and roll shows throughout North America. And you know what, part of that was kind of my motivation at the time, my goals. And again, once I hit those goals, I got, you know, night after night on the highway and with only the CB radio and the headlights of the car to keep you company, I realized it wasn't going to be enough for me. So I shifted gears, literally, and took on some sales roles. My dad was a sales guy and ended up in the packaged goods. And you know what? I was quite happy when I landed at Nabisco. I was there for 6 years and moving along through the corporate environment, quite enjoying it. Being quite successful, I took on a number of roles. Every year I was promoted, so I was moving forward. Again, it suited my needs at the time, but I guess the entrepreneurial spirit started to make noise and took over, and I left there to start my first company. So over the next 25 years, I pretty much was self-employed, and as I like to tell people, it took me 25 years to become an overnight success. It's a long journey.
That sounds amazing. So at what age did you start your entrepreneur journey?
I think I was about 29. And the thing is I just got promoted to a fairly upper middle management position, a lot of responsibility, nice paycheck, had a nice mortgage, a newborn son, and I'll quit to start my first company. Which, you know what, confident that we were going to succeed, but over the next years, that first company became my MBA in what not to do in small business. You name it, I faced it. I had buying out partners and staffing issues. And again, I always tell entrepreneurs when I'm working with them, is what you don't know about business will always exceed what you do know. No matter how much knowledge you have, it's never ending. You need to get better and continually peel the onion back and dive deeper into the subjects to become more successful. But there's an assumption we make when we go in that we got a loaded toolbox, when in fact it isn't. And boy, a lot of hard lessons to learn. Yep. But that company, after 8 years, for all the duress, I like to say, and you know, never taking a regular paycheck, I had a staff of 150 people that got paid every 2 weeks. And my wife and I were always the last one. I learned more about how to be successful from that organization, even though it wasn't a tremendous success. I did go on to lead or sort of create the foundation for future endeavors.
That's amazing. Yeah, like your story, how you became an entrepreneur, resembles how I started, really, because at that time where I started, I just got married, I bought a home, and I left my job. Right? And the drive that you have is incredible, right? Like, because you want to make it work. You want to support your family, support whatever endeavors you have, right? So there is definitely a risk component, but there's also a lot of learning and reward. Right at the end.
Correct. And you need to be incredibly positive. And I always thought myself as positive, but I mean, that's being self-employed is quite the challenge. First off, it's very lonely. It's a lonely existence because you really got nobody to share your problems with. As much as I tell people, you know, you work and talk with your people, you can't share your problems. Problems travel up the organization, not down the organization. Those are yours. You get to own them. And you're allowed poor me days where, you know what, you kind of question your sanity and what the heck you're doing it for. But they can only be days. They can't turn into weeks, months, and years. So, when I meet people, I've met with over 1,000 entrepreneurs and coached them, mentored them, advised them. And if they have a negative attitude, it's not a good place to be. If that's where your happy place is going negative, no. You need to be able to pull yourself up and go, because there are some pretty dark days as an owner.
For sure. So in terms of inspiration, were there people in your life that inspired you to become who you are today? Like throughout your years, you were able to pivot multiple careers as well as entrepreneurship because you've run multiple companies. Were there people that you looked up to, mentors, coaches? How did you become who you are today?
You know what, quite frankly, I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have that person. I didn't have a Greg to turn to, quite frankly. I wish I had him because, you know what, I made all those mistakes. I fell off the bicycle or got kicked off the horse a number of times. Where I learned, you know what, I discovered early on that because of certainly living in the GTA, the Toronto area at the time, and the commutes to clients, let alone into the office that was located in Toronto and living in the suburbs, I spent a tremendous amount of time listening to audio books and courses in the car. Again, I don't have any post-secondary education, and there was always a bit of an anchor that I felt. What I quickly realized is there was other venues and avenues to earn or learn things, and the car became my university.
Sure.
And I spent hours upon hours and thousands of dollars buying the I'm dating myself, the cassette tapes to play, and instead of listening to the radio. So that is really where I learned. I have a personal saying that if you asked any of my kids, they'd be able to tell you in an instant. It's my saying is, be curious, be forever curious. We can't stop learning. And I think that's what keeps me going and allows for those learning moments that you can turn into a teaching moment. As an owner, you need to teach too. So you learning also helps you to teach your staff and clients.
No, that's great. So in terms of like growing up, and I know when you're young, you always have these dreams and wanting to become and inspired to be that person. Was this what you inspired to be growing up? And did it change over the years?
I think our motivation and, you know, the term, what is our why is kind of the current form of that. But at the end of the day is what motivates us. And I think throughout my life, from whether it's a young age, I mean, when I kid about having the paper routes and shoveling snow for people and cutting their lawns and washing cars in the summer when I was quite little, you know what, came from a big family. No allowance. Dad said, you want one, go earn it. And but that set the foundation to, you know, being able to go knock on total strangers' doors and start having a conversation. I'm talking, I was 6, 7, 8 years old. Just being able to do that, I never really appreciated it until just a few years ago that they set the tone. Paper routes with contests. It's interesting how our younger years can affect us as we move forward in terms of developing our skills. Did I want to be an entrepreneur? Maybe. I don't really think that was it. I just wanted to be successful, and I hadn't defined that. And I don't think any of us do at any stage. I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do when I grow up. So. As we go through that, I don't know if if that's a constant through our life, I think it does change. I mean, success takes on many forms. And I like to say, define your own success. And again, depending on what stage of life you're in, whether you're just starting out, you know, your priorities become, you know, I want a house, I want, you know, a good job. And as you kind of shift into that comfort zone, your priorities change. And so does your motivation and so does your definitions.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. I always look up for up to successful people, and it changes definitely, like, depending on where you're at in your life. Right. So when I was employed at a large company, I looked up to that VP of sales role, right?
Absolutely.
People that status where they were dictating how the meetings ran, right? They succeeded. They've been doing it for multiple years. But now I'm on the other side where now I want to make an impact where all my employees look up to me, right? So now I need to set that where people, you know, inspire to meet me. So I want to do the best I can, right?
You know what? That's a good point. And, you know, one of the things that I'm constantly asked, you know, what was the motivation for going into business? And quite frankly, at the end of the day, success is kind of, yeah, it's a nice statement, but what did it mean? It was quite frankly to make some money and make more than the average bear. And as you, again, the early days, you're struggling, you're just trying to make a paycheck. but as you get to put a few pennies in the bank and the pennies become dollars and you kind of grow and mature in the role as an owner operator and hiring people and then being the leader and whatnot, yes, money still is a priority because that's, you know what, that's the end game. But at some point you also, it shifts a little bit to giving back. And when you get into that zone where you can comfortable, I've done a number of things in our community in Whitby and overseas, internationally traveled to for outreach programs. It gave you an opportunity, but I think it's more of establishing a comfort zone. And now my priority is completely different. It's really to help people avoid the mistakes that I made. And I made them all. So I can go, you know, I can stand there, wave my arms, go, don't go there. It's going to hurt. And so that's really my motivation.
There's certain things you can't learn in a book. You have to experience it. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about. Real world, living in the trenches and learning by mistakes.
Well, funny enough, I now teach the college that I tried to go to. I went there for a couple of semesters and really just hung out, played cards and didn't go to class. So I left. But now I'm the entrepreneurship professor there. Mm. And it's ironic. I've done this in my second semester doing it, and getting the reviews from last semester was fascinating. The students going, yeah, less book and we want to hear more of the stories, which was kind of telling. And I went, well, okay, I guess I'm doing something right. They really want to hear the stuff. How did you scrape your knee? How did you get that one? It's kind of sometimes like the two old guys sitting around go, hey, look at this car. Oh, yeah, I ain't seen nothing. I got this one in this battle. Mm-hmm. I think it's real.
I think that's one thing that is lacking in our school system, right? A lot of educators that don't really have real life experience versus case studies with real people going through the actual true tested journey, right, of being an entrepreneur. So you bring so much more value than someone that's kind of brought up in the education system, right? Because they don't really know what real entrepreneurs have to go through. Mm-hmm. They've just read it.
Fair enough. And, you know, one of my current statements is, and I'm actually thinking of incorporating it maybe into a blog or another podcast, is called Ignore the Hype. They're, you know, everybody's far more successful than you are on Facebook and social media. I mean, it's like amazing how successful they are. And it's really depressing. But it's, you know what, it's very shallow statements. Many people, even well-known celebrities, are throwing out statements. You know what, it's harder than just a statement. The work that's required to be successful. I was involved in 7 enterprises. And, you know, I will say of those, 2 were very successful. 2 were break even, and the other 3 were train wrecks. And there's a lot of reasons for that, either not being in control or, again, when you have a little bit of success somewhere as an entrepreneur, you think you're invincible. Mm-hmm. You know what? You're not. Stick to your knitting. Whatever industry you're in, continue that way, because that's where your experiences and knowledge is, and you can become that expert. I know one, Richard Branson, whom I have a tremendous respect for, there's a statement floating around that, you know, if an opportunity presents itself, take it. That's easy for him to say, probably easy for me to say, and I'm certainly not in his category. But when you're starting out, you're not that good. And it takes a long time to develop your expertise. And if you're going into an industry where you have no knowledge, you need a really, really long runway. Mm. And that runway consists of a lot of money and a lot of time. And most people don't. They fail miserably. It's the adage is, you know, oh, I like to cook, so let me open a restaurant. No, you don't know anything about reservation systems, food ordering, et cetera, how to manage staff, how to schedule, how to cook. There's a lot that goes into opening a restaurant besides just liking to cook.
Could you, and John, I know we talked about this before, but Greg, could you speak to maybe three tips for someone starting out today, an entrepreneur?
Well, okay, certainly ignore the hype. I already talked about that one, but be passionate about what you're doing. And passion is different than excitement. And it usually comes from a source of knowledge. But as an example is, I'm excited to be on this show today and talk with you guys. It's fascinating. But tomorrow, I'm not going to be excited because this moment has passed. And it's usually a point in time. Passion is what you need because it keeps you going in those dark days. Mm-hmm. If you don't truly believe in what you're doing, then don't do it. Don't start. Don't go down that highway. It's hard to generate passion as you're going down the road. You need it to start because that's what keeps you going. So that's probably the number one item I have for entrepreneurs. And, you know, be local. I talk about owning your sandbox, and so many people try to throw their net farther afield than they really can, whether it's mm-hmm. regionally or provincially or nationally. You know, you better own your backyard first and make sure you've got it, you know, nailed down before you try to expand. Look, I had visions of grandeur. I always wanted to build the empire. You know, you dream of having those corporate jets and that office in the Bahamas for whatever. After a while, reality sets in and says, no, you know, I better get my stuff together here. Mm-hmm. Own it. So, you know, as I think Warren Buffett talks about creating a moat, but create a moat around your business so nobody mm-hmm. comes in. Once that's established, and you have the resources, then you can expand. I find people expanding too often.
I like that.
And thirdly, stick to your knitting. Just stick to your knitting. Be the best you can be. Be the expert that people come to within your industry. Mm. And you know what? Shiny objects look great and new opportunities are sexy. I get it. But sticking with your own industry is probably, those are probably three. I probably got about 10, but those are three for now.
They're excellent. Yep.
So asking you back where, when you started doing truck driving to becoming a salesperson to your seven entrepreneur companies, did you have to pivot or were they very similar in the long lines of the same kind of industry vertical niche that you were following?
None of them were. The truck driving, you know, was, you know, going from local deliveries with Sears delivering furniture to long haul truck driving, completely different. Now you had to deal with border crossings and state issues. And so significantly different. But the underlying current, and I'll talk a little bit about it, is I always wanted to be the best that I could be. And I proved that many times. Certainly in the truck driving, there's a lot of, in those days, a lot of grizzled old truck drivers. There was things that I did. I'd always show up on time. I mean, and there are lessons that I've never forgotten. And I actually, one of the thoughts of having a book is my next book would be everything I learned about small businesses that I learned from truck driving. You know, it's be on time, learn to shift gears and downshift when you need to, and detours. You have to take detours sometimes when the road's closed or you face an obstacle. So it was all driven by being better, being on time. I always prided myself in being there way before the load-in time as a trucker. As I moved into sales, as I moved out of trucking, wow, I had to take some kind of menial sales jobs to get the experience because it still holds true today. You can't get the job until you have experience and you can't get experience until you have the job. It's one of those, but sales was, I took a number of jobs and eventually ended up at in a corporate environment. And again, what I wanted to do, John, you mentioned about being aspired to be the VP. Absolutely, was what I was planning to be. I was only a couple of years away when I left at a very young age, but that was my goal, and to be the best that I could be. And then again, when you set off onto your entrepreneurial journey, you learn that it's not that easy, but at the end of the day, is serving your customer at a fair price. Those two things. So the motivation becomes the same. So pivoting, the beauty about me going into my business as an entrepreneurial, it was an offshoot of the packaged goods industry. I just moved straight into an outsourced service provider to the industry. I knew it hands down. So the learning curve was very minimal. I had to learn about being a small business owner, but besides that, the industry I knew cold. So they're connected, they're disconnected, but there's a lot of things that you can bring from any career. I tell people now, students especially, you know, if they're working at those, let's call them the McJobs as a favorite term, whether it's Starbucks or McDonald's, you know, McDonald's is one of the largest corporations in the world run by teenagers. And when you think about it, how do they put those processes in place? You walk into a Starbucks around the world, or McDonald's is like, hi, welcome to McDonald's. Or the process at Starbucks is the same in thousands upon thousands of restaurants. And every big business started as a small business.
Mm-hmm.
And when you understand that, those processes that you're seeing as a part-time employee going to school or whatever, or waiting to be discovered, you can use those and apply those to any career or your business as you move forward.
Yeah. So even that's a great statement, because looking back, even on my business journey, right, entrepreneurship journey, the process didn't happen until maybe year three or four, which at the beginning, you're just so busy working and, you know, paying your staff or getting by, right? So it doesn't get to you. Like, you don't really think about it until things kind of settle down and you are reflecting, right? And the sooner you do that, the sooner you're able to have better sleep and hire the right type of people for your process, right? And have systems in place. Yeah.
And that's a great point. I mean, at the end of my first company, after 8 years, I went screaming into the night and really dumped it for what was owed on the books, so that I could walk away without any debt. 150 people doing, you know, a few million dollars a year. It was a painful exercise. However, I was the hardest working person in my company. That's what I tell people now. You're not supposed to be. I was working 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. It was crazy. And I got rid of that company, but I vowed at that point not to be defeated. So I started up again. I tweaked the concept significantly and relaunched, but I made a promise to myself, and it was never to take my briefcase home at night. And when I did that, it forced me to all of a sudden reconfigure how I did things. In other words, we had to get it done during normal business hours, and I wasn't taking it home. So that wasn't an out to say, oh, I know what, I'll do it later. I created processes. The company, after 17 years is when I sold it. One of the reasons I sold it is I was a little bored. It was running so smoothly. I could go away for days and days at a time, and the company didn't miss a beat. But we created the process, put the right people in place, as you just said. But we had documented everything, and it ran like a well-oiled machine that was great. And at that point, it was time for a change anyways, but nevertheless.
Yeah, no, that's great, because running a business, you don't want to be in the business. You want to be a business that's self-sustained, and you can walk out, like you said, and live. You know, you're the one who set off doing the business and building it. So you should have more free time and live a better life, right? Like, whatever that better is, which is time, right? You want to spend time with the best people or most influential, or build on relationships that you want to. So,
you know what? And when I talk at events, and one of the first questions I open is, how many people are self-employed? Secondly, why did you go into business? And it's like, many of them, it's the money, freedom, or didn't want to have a boss. Mm-hmm. Those are the three popular answers I get time and time again. And the thing is, well, you go into business, it's going to be a while before you have any money. Mm-hmm. Freedom, well, you need to create that. And are you kidding me? You got more bosses as an entrepreneur than you ever did as a corporate employee. Every customer becomes a boss, and some days it's unrelenting. But the point of all that is, what are you going, and I tell them, what are you going in the business for? It was to create freedom. You're not supposed to be working 16 hours a day. It's a lesson that many don't learn. Mm-hmm. I deal with a lot of owners that are 15 years into it and they're still in the startup mode or the startup mm-hmm. mindset. They should have shifted gears a long time ago, but nobody told them it was okay to give things away. And you know, another tip is delegate. Yeah. Absolutely everything. But unfortunately, what happens in this day and age, and most people is, oh, I can't give them this. You know, they don't understand it. Mm-hmm. Well, first off, they may not be as smart as you are today about the industry, but they're probably as smart as you used to be. Number one. Number two, we look at everything as a big task, one big unit, when in fact, it's made up of a number of steps in there to achieve an assignment or a project. If you start giving away some of the smaller value, less complex items to people, you know, let's just use an example, there's 15 items to accomplish an assignment, give them two or three. Once they get that down, give them a couple of more, all of a sudden at six, seven, eight, you've given away 50% of the work to people, you've empowered them, mm-hmm. and now you've freed yourself up, because as owners, there's a couple of things here. People go to work to be successful. And it's horrible when they're standing around waiting for the boss to tell them what to do. They should mm-hmm. know what to do day in, day out. Yep. And number two, the boss's job is really to work with people and teach. It's not to do. Mm-hmm. You should be spending 80% of your time working with your people and help making them better, showing them how to do things, understanding what you're trying to do, your end game. And too many owners keep the communication to themselves. They're quiet and lock it all up, when in fact, share your knowledge. Mm-hmm. I work in front of lately a lot of trades people, and I use the example of the apprentice, the journeyman, and the master scenario. Once upon a time, back in medieval, and it's really out of Germany, and the guilds that started this, is parents would take their kids to a master to teach them a craft. Mm. The apprentice, it comes from the French word apprendre, and to learn, in other words, so they would, these apprentices would work with the master, and being the operative word. Yes, they would do the menial task, but they were working with the master over a period of 7 years, at which point they were, could have the opportunity to become a journeyman. Mm-hmm. A journeyman really is a mashup of the French word journée, day, and the English word journey, to travel. So they could now go and work on behalf of the master to earn a living. But all that time, they're still working with the master. And also, they had the right as a journeyman to work with other masters. Mm. Another 7 years, and not until the end of that could the masters get together and say, yes, this journeyman is now qualified to be a master. Today's day and age, everybody is expecting their hires to be fully baked. They come out of school, trained. They may be technically competent, but there's so many soft skills mm-hmm. in business, how to treat customers, how to talk to them, how to sell. That's not being taught anywhere. And that is the owner's responsibility if they hope to have any freedom or to get more life out of their business. Mm-hmm. So those are things that I expound, and I put them in the play, and I learned them the hard way. But boy, when that starts to happen, it's amazing what people will rise up and do mm-hmm. for you, even part-timers.
That might even be the answer, Greg, today for business owners, that to if the right word is maybe being loyal to their employees, help them, train them, that gives them better satisfaction. The employee, hence they'll stay, versus today it's that gig economy where no one's really in a relationship with any employee, and that's why you'll have less people staying around.
Totally agree with that. That is such a huge issue with this gig economy. And that's part of that ignore the hype that I'm trying to tell. It's not cool to have three part-time jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, the three people that might like it are the ones being interviewed and then are being exposed on social media as this is a great way to make a living. When you talk to the thousands of others, no, they would like a real job. Mm-hmm. And they would like that security and comfort. Mm-hmm. And owners of small businesses that employ 85% of the people, and certainly in Canada here, and I think that's pretty much anywhere in the Western world. You teach them, they go to work to be successful. Quit mm-hmm. getting in their way, but empower them. They'll stay. As they say, people don't leave the company, they leave a manager or an owner. Sure.
Or people. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Especially in the sales environment, right? Like, you go in there, you focus, and you kind of do what you need to do, because you're front line. You take a lot of the bad communication with customers. You absorb it all, and then you go back to the management and sales meetings, whatnot, and then you get bombarded as well for KPIs and goals, and you're doing the best you can, right? So unless you're in that world environment, you kind of understand what really it means to be like motivated and inspired, right? Like you need to focus on your goals, right? And it's very difficult if you don't come from a sales world or environment. Being an entrepreneur, you're selling all day long, all the time, right? And not everyone is cut up for that because they're not used to rejection. They think starting a business, they dictate how things are going to be done. Well, that's kind of the opposite, right? You kind of adapt and kind of figure out who your audience is throughout the journey, right? Like things will change. Your type of clients will change over the years as well, right? Because you'll learn who is your ideal customer.
Big point on that. And again, you know, people, I just kind of got into a challenge match with somebody online about selling, and the big, you know, you need to be able to sell. It's one of the number one priorities of any entrepreneur. Yet today, again, part of the ignore the hype mission that I'm on is it's telling you no. As long as you're passionate about your project, okay, people will just come to your business, you know, put up, be visible on social media, and I'm all for that. Those are great tools. But you better be able to sell. You better be able to go connect. You need those people and close the deals. People aren't just buying everything online now. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to have that interaction and communicate with people. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the challenge. And as we move forward as entrepreneurs, we can't buy or drink that Kool-Aid that says, no, we can just do it other ways. We don't have to put the effort in. Selling is probably the number one skill that I think entrepreneurs need.
And it's not taught in school.
No. They've tried and right. It doesn't get taught. You know, and I'll give you an example. You're talking about motivation. I was in the insurance business and it kind of prompted me. I was there for 3 years as I was learning my sales skill. Actually, it was a great place to learn selling. And my first year, I was Rookie of the Year, and my manager was old school, and he thought his way of motivating me was to put more pressure on me to do better. And I was already excelling across the country with this organization. I was kind of the lead duck, winning the Rookie of the Year thing. And that is so wrong. People need to be able to find, everybody's different. Everybody's motivated differently, but they need to be able to find what truly motivates them. Mm-hmm. And being again, very much old school, it was a kind of Glenn Gary, Glenn Ross, you know, first prize gets a Cadillac, second prize, steak knives.
Steak knives.
It's big gap. But he is one of the reasons I left because of the undue pressure that was applied. And you have to be cognizant and empathetic of how people are motivated, but you are that motivator and self-motivator for yourself too. You got to get out of bed in the morning and lead the charge.
Oh, that's good. It's great tips. In terms of mistakes over the years, can you think of some that were some of the biggest ones that you've made, and how did you overcome them, and did it set you back or moved you ahead?
Well, I think we have to do a whole other podcast for those because we don't have enough time to go through that.
Maybe like one or two of them.
Fair enough. I personally have, I'm not a fan of most partnerships. I have been through them. I'm a slow study. I went through enough of them to realize a very challenging business environment. It's tough enough to go into business. And again, I talk to entrepreneurs and say, you know what? You think you need somebody to help you. And it's usually I'm talking to the person whose idea it is, and they're going after another colleague to join them on their crusade. If that's happening, I'm saying, no, you don't need anybody else, because chances are that other person's not going to last. Mm-hmm. And I ran through that multiple times. Now, let me caveat everything. When you find a partnership that works, they are brilliant, because there's always somebody else that's got your back and that you can talk with. But those are very few and far between. And it's painful when you have to buy out a partner, let alone the lead up to that whole situation, buying them out. And as I said, I went in it many times. And what you realize is your motivation may be true and staying on course on, in the right direction. Theirs start to wane if it wasn't really the essence. So that's a huge problem. And I, wow, that's what cost my first company, really, buying them out. And I had another partner who bankrupted another company that I got into. I got one of the seven. I was kind of cajoled into starting or agreeing to go into it with my original partner. And then that company went down. Another partnership failed. I had warned the individual, but again, they thought they knew better. And a major retailer took us for a significant amount of money at the time. And that became a domino onto my core company, which became incredible to hold on because the banking relationship was the same. I won't bore people with the detail, but the bank came to me and said, we want your overdraft covered in 20 days. And it was $120,000. And after 8 years of rarely taking a regular paycheck, I didn't know where I was coming up with that. I survived and it was fine. But you know what? I just find have enough confidence in your idea that you can do it on your own, quite frankly.
So there's so many companies that want to be and inspire to be on Dragon's Den and Shark Tank, and also VCs and, you know, angels. What do you have to tell to those people? Because they see it, they read it, and they look at Facebook or Apple as inspiration, but they're one in a billion or a trillion, right? Like, because you hear it all the time. I hear it all the time. They want to scale. They want to grow at 10x, 100x, right? What do you have to say on that front?
You know what? First, you need to get the process straight and figured out, you know, and the 10x term and 100x, I'm going, wow, when did that happen? It used to be, I'm going to grow my business 10 times. Now it's just, we're just, you know, coming up with all these terms, 10x, and like everybody's supposed to know what that means. The thing is, you know what? There's many small business owners. Number one, they in boring businesses, they're not sexy, but man, they're making a great living. They're, you know, they would never be on Dragon's Den. They would have never been on Dragon's Den or Shark Tank. And they're doing fine. Some of the best businesses out there are boring and simple. So when I hear these people wanting to, I have a challenge with these TV shows. You got to understand that they're reality TV. They're made for TV. I have also an issue with them when they want to embarrass people that come on there. I don't think, I'm kind of saddened that a society that we're now exposing people to who have a dream and we have to ridicule them on TV. Okay, that doesn't sit well with me. Many of the deals on those shows never happen. So it's kind of, I think the number I heard was 85% of the deals made never came to fruition. So it's like, okay, so what are we selling here? It's great exposure, maybe, if you have a decent idea. Again, it falls under the ignore the hype category. And this is where this is coming from. It's instant success. No, that's not real world. It doesn't, I don't care if they accept it. You still got a lot of work to do and to go forward and consummate their deal. And most of them, I said, don't happen. So that whole world of instant success, it's never changed. You can't get rich quick. The only people that are getting rich quick are people that are selling you courses on how to get rich quick. I mean, that's about it. the rest of it is a long, slow process. And stick to your knitting, stick close to home. Get better before bigger is kind of my my motto. And again, learn that the hard way, if that helps.
I think you have nailed a couple of major points right there. It's like when you're on Dragon's Den or you're trying to raise money, that's like forming a partnership that they're going to walk all over you and you have another boss after that, right? And you don't realize, even though they fund you, you have no idea what's going to happen afterwards because you're going to be working. You think you're working hard now. Well, guess what? When they want a 10X return or 100X, they're going to really grind you. And those weekly meetings aren't going to be you dictating what's going to happen. They're dictating how everything's going to run, right?
So. Oh, totally. And you know what? There's more power to the world of Mark Zuckerberg and you know, the Bill Gates of the world and Richard Branson. They are the exception. There's 7 billion people on this planet. There's not a lot of them that are kind of in that category. And they are the unicorns for the right reason. I haven't seen a unicorn in a long time. So, you know, the reality is most business owners are pretty simple, going to earn a good life. They're not going to be uber wealthy. They're not going to hit the billionaire club. But you don't need to. And I think that's, it's again part of that hype thing that everybody has to be that successful when you know what, being somewhat successful is really good.
Very true. So in terms of the next question, I just want to ask you, so how has running a small business changed in terms of advancements, in terms of technology, software? Because things have changed. You've seen it over the years, right? From your truck driving days and before GPS to running your own companies. How has that helped you grow your business and succeed?
You know what? I think it's brilliant. Technology is wonderful. And I'm not a techie by any strength, any stretch of the imagination, but I do appreciate some of the technology and the applications. You're right, from the days of driving truck. No, you open your map, you planned your route ahead of time, and then you hope you didn't miss the exit as you're driving through the middle of the night and maybe a storm or whatever. So it's... great skill, because I'll tell you what, it's never left me in many areas, and I've translated that in the business, you know, mapping it out ahead of time to make sure you don't go by your exit. But when I had my first company, I had 150 people working across Canada before internet and cell phones. And for the younger listeners, there was a time there was no internet and there was no cell phones. Your day became that much longer because the only time you could reach out to the people across the country was after hours. So not only did you put in a full day at the office, now you got to talk to them in the evening, just extended your day automatically. So now technology, text messaging, email, it's instant, it's wonderful, it's abused. But I think, as a sidebar here, I think there's a movement afoot. Flip phones are making a huge comeback, apparently, because people are checking out and dumping their smartphones because of the intrusions. But again, being able to do that and have that instant communication. You know, think about a challenge or a problem that comes up during the day and you can't get a hold of somebody till later on that night, hopefully, if you get them at home. Now it's, you can deal with it instantly, move it off your desk. So it makes you more efficient. The virtualness, and on one of the companies I had, I produced TV commercials. I produced over 100 TV commercials. And again, that's another episode. But it was a virtual company, and in the early days, it was a laptop and cell phone. And it was brilliant how everything, it was just kind of the early days of tech really becoming mainstream. You could do everything and outsource everything and not have to have those overheads. And as far as a media company goes, you didn't have to keep feeding the beast. If there was no business, you could shut it down until the next project came up. So it was a wonderful application. I just think it's a double-edged sword because of the technology today. It's so easy to do so many things that were so challenging. It's cheaper to get into business than it's ever been. But the other side of that coin is now they're telling everybody should be in business. Everybody needs to be an entrepreneur. You need to be an entrepreneur. You need to be an entrepreneur. And quite frankly, that's not the case. I believe, you know, the ratio of 85% of small businesses that fail after 5 years is actually, I understand, growing now. And part of it is because of all the noise out there that says, everybody don't get a job, you know, be an entrepreneur. And people that are not qualified and haven't done the work and researched their idea, they're all jumping in because, you know, whether it's governments that are supporting this and patting them on the back and giving them a certificate of participation and some money, the failure rate is actually growing. So that's the other side of technology, because you don't need, once upon a time you started a business, you needed a location, you needed an office, you needed a receptionist setup, you needed phone systems. Now everything's done on your cell phone and you're self-administer everything. So
sure.
far different. So those are how I see the changes, but I think if you have a good idea and you can leverage in the technology within reason without getting crazy, wow, you can be far more profitable and grow your business far quicker than ever. Because it used to be face to face. Now we need to get back to that, but so much of the day-to-day stuff can be done technically.
I totally agree. Like, barriers to entry is so low today, however you don't want to abuse it, right? So that experience of relationship building, it cannot be the same, right? Like, something virtual or email or chat or social media texting is not the same as going out and meeting people and building a real connection with your prospect, right? And real customer. Like, that's what I think differentiates you from a new company versus someone that's actually gone through the whole journey of running a business for 5-10 years, right?
Right.
So I get it. Even when I started, like, I didn't have these chat groups that I have today. Like, Slack wasn't around. We didn't have Google Drives that we use, right? Like, we had just what I learned previously at my old company because it worked. And why change it if it worked, right? But then you want to become more efficient, right? You want to increase productivity and less downtime. Mm-hmm. So that's the key with technology and software. As long as everything is enhanced, where you can actually improve processes and become, you know, more efficient and work better, work smarter, then of course. But don't let it run your life, because you should finish at 5 or 6 or whatever time you want to finish, mm-hmm. and live your other life, which is could be family, it could be taking care of children, it could be, you know, go study or do some hobbies, because you can't let your business run you, right? You're the one starting the business, so you got to dictate how you want to run your business.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, one of the things that we don't do as a society much anymore, and especially as entrepreneurs, we don't think about our business. And I'm not talking about worrying. We worry all the time about our business. So that's completely different. I mean, honest thinking about what direction, how do we want to go? Why should we continue doing what we're doing? You know, we have to sometimes make tough decisions and let clients go, do away with whole industries. I had to do that. I mean, when I had my marketing resource group, which was my telesales organization, at one point we just reached profitability just over the break even mark. And I did a whole review of our business and realized what we were good at, what we weren't, where we could excel and where we could only compete. And I don't like competing, so I create my own niche. I had to lop off $300,000 worth of business. Two people at the time liked Dell computers. They were big corporate clients that I'm going, they were wonderful to get, a lot of work, but I went, no, they're not who we are. They're not at what we excel at. And it's like, oh, but it required thought. It required to steal away time without interaction, without interruptions also, and just make these decisions. So I challenge owners to find the time now to think quietly and just get their arms around without distractions about where they want to go. Do they want to expand? Do they want to 10X their business? Or you know what? Do they just want to hit a level that they're comfortable? Because I'm all about defining your own success. Again, this ignore the hype thing. Define your own success. What do you want to do when you grow up? Mm-hmm. Too often we go smoking through the intersection of hard work and achievement, and we don't even stop to appreciate that we've created something out of nothing. We're employing people. We have a business that we've created. Take a moment, stand around, look at it, think about the achievement. If it's not good enough, take the flag, move it down the road, and then go for it. But until you know exactly what you're going for, you know, step off the treadmill, take the moment, and figure it all out. Mm.
Self-reflection is so key, right?
Mental. We don't have time now.
You make time, right? As a business owner, you got to make time and do this on a regular basis. Figure out who your ideal customers are, which ones are draining you resources, time, and even people that actually belittle you or speak down at you, right? They're not your customers. You're the one that should be working with people you want to work. You're the one who set up. Don't let them dictate how your business is run, right? There's so many companies out there or customers that are used to, because they have big buying power. They are your biggest client. So mm-hmm. you think you have to beckon to them, right? Realize that early on. And once you realize that, you'll sleep better.
And you know what? It's funny you say that. I had a couple of times because of what we did. And again, it was different for the industry. We were pioneers, and it's always tough to take the pioneers or being a pioneer, because I think they said, there's a saying that the pioneers get the arrow and the next generation gets the rewards or something. So you do take a lot of hits. And I remember somebody saying to me many times, different clients, they were saying, okay, here's what we want you to do. And I went, no. I'm the expert in this. This is my business. This is how we're going to do it. That's why you hired me. Mm. If you knew how to do this, and if you were the expert, you wouldn't need me. And it's no disrespect, but like, I am the expert. This is what we do here. Now, if you're going to adopt that attitude, you better be right.
Exactly.
So it's a, you know what, but at the same time, so many people capitulate their way of doing things to appease the customer. You know what? It's okay to say no. Stand up, bark, make sure you tell people, no, I'm the expert. That's why you hired me.
It's very similar. Yeah. You learn that early. Hopefully you're able to learn that earlier in your journey, because if you think of the mindset of how did doctors become who they are and why are they having so much influence, right? Or dentists or lawyers, they're considered experts in their field.
Correct.
Right. So if you are able to position yourself with all the experience and actually back up what you're saying with good testimonies, case studies, whatnot, you should be thought after as well, right? Like people look to you as the expert. So you should be able to uncover what their needs are and see if it really matches yours. If they're not a good fit, then move on and let them know, right? And, you know, myself and Roger, we've, you know, learned over the years, like not everyone is our client because they don't fit in terms of what we're after. Right? They're looking for way more than what we can deliver. So why even take them on? And, you know, they're going to be disappointed at the end, right? Which is okay.
Sometimes it's a cultural mismatch. That happens too. You just can't communicate properly. But a lot of it comes down to expectations and set the expectations and don't let them dictate how you do business because you're the expert. And if you become the expert, wow. All sorts of things start to happen and become perceived as the expert. It's a bit of a magnet to all sorts of opportunities.
Oh, that's great. In terms of over the years, did you do a lot of networking events? Like as an entrepreneur today, there's so much information out there, right? But you know, right now there's social networking, there's live networking, there's webinars. How did you use that in your business? Or was it more of the audio tapes to really network with like-minded people in your industry?
So networking wasn't the buzzword or the abused word that it is today. I don't even know if it existed when I first started the actual term. But you know what? One of the mistakes I did make was not to network in various organizations that in hindsight, I wish I had. I would have had probably a lot more success, and I'm not complaining with one hand, but I realized, oops, made a mistake. There are now not all networking events are the same. Some have absolutely no value yet build otherwise. And there's many of those I've been to. I related to going to walking into them and it's a room full of puppies that are all excited to see you until they find out they can't sell you anything and off they go again. And you go, what the heck is that all about? So as we move forward, one of the things, you know, get involved in industry related events are huge, huge opportunity to become the expert or being perceived as that expert if you're visible within the organization.
No, that's great.
So that's certainly one thing I would do. I use, you know, not everybody's comfortable networking. It's like going to a high school dance where you stand at the back of the auditorium and you got to be there because all the cool kids are there and you're not one of them. And you can't wait till it's over. But you're trying to be cool standing there with your, you know, whatever Coke in your hand. So there's a couple of tips, very simple. When you go to these events and if they're appropriate, one of the is to go up to people and just ask them and start the conversation because that's how you start to make things happen. And I've got a simple tip for people is go up to the person and ask them what they do when they're not at the networking event. And it just starts the dialogue. Mm. The next question is, are you married? Do you have kids? Again, it starts the conversation. You quickly realize that if you have nothing in common, you can say, well, nice meeting you and move away and move on to somebody else. So that's one thing. Get involved in organizations that are community-based because as I said before, being local is part of being visible in your community. Not all businesses are local, but many, many are. So join organizations that are like the Chambers of Commerce. I headed up two of them here in Ottawa. And to show you the example, and I use that very much so, when I had my business and I LinkedIn had started, when I sold the company and retired, I think I had 326 connections on LinkedIn. Not bad. So being retired and joining the chambers and getting involved and heading them up, it skyrocketed to over 2,000 connections very quickly. And I had nothing to sell, really. I'm a retired guy, but it's fascinating to watch how those connections develop when just being visible in your community with like-minded people, wonderful things happen. And as a result of just being involved, and again, I had nothing to sell, I regularly tell people by being involved in that particular organization, that was with me, I've generated hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of revenue, all related to being involved because of connections that I made there have led to other connections, have led to other connections. It's really bizarre, but it's fascinating work. So again, not everybody's comfortable at networking, and I can give them a tip. One of the alternative methods is, I call it the Coffee a Week Club, is make a list of everybody you know, and I mean absolutely everybody, and that should easily hit the 200 mark. And certainly business people, if that's where you want to keep it, then you're going to be around 100. And just phone them and invite them to coffee once a week, one person a week, and remind them what you do. Let them know what you do. It's not about selling. It's about just informing them. And you do that every week. At the end of the week or year, you got 50 connections that know what you do. One of our challenges as business owners is we always assume that our clients will remember us.
Mm-hmm. Out of sight, out of mind.
Right. And it's not their job to remember us. It's our job to stay in front of them. And, some of the less experienced entrepreneurs is, well, I don't want to be a pest to them. You're not being a pest. They'll not accept your coffee invitation, or they will. And if they do, then just remind them, hey, by the way, this is what we do.
These are all valid points. I think the big thing is you can use technology for your benefit today, like a newsletter, email, or social posts. However, nothing beats a one-on-one conversation in terms of coffee, lunch, meal, because you've already built that connection. They know who you are and you're just catching up. Another thing I would also add is become a giver, where you're bringing value. Ask them how you can help them out wherever they're in need, right? Because ultimately, they like people that are, if you're willing to lend a helping hand, you don't have to give them your services for free, but you might know someone that can help them, right? So if you can find out what they're struggling at right now, and you can be a benefit to them, they'll remember you, right?
You know what? You're absolutely right. Being a giver, and it's kind of weird. I'm at that stage now where that's all I pretty much do. Yep. And the opportunities that come my way are crazy. I love it.
It makes you feel good.
I'm the share. I hate to see people struggle. And if I can help them, I will.
Well, that's great.
So no, good point. That's a great point, John.
So I know we've already taken up a lot of your time, but to kind of finish this off, in terms of your business, is there other pillars that you're kind of that kind of motivated you to become who you are today? Like, I know people focus so heavily on business in terms of being an entrepreneur, but family plays a huge role. Health plays a real huge role. Community also plays a huge role. How did that, throughout your journey, I'm sure throughout, 60 plus years, you'd have to pivot your way, right? Because you have children or your grandparent, that changes everything, right? Where are you today?
Today, I guess I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do when I grow up, which is kind of weird, but very true. I think part of it is the reason I accepted the teaching assignment. It was, I want to share the knowledge I have. Yes, I've written a book, and yes, I do a podcast. I still don't think it's enough. I need the one-on-one interaction to help these individuals at least share my journey and help them avoid the mistakes. You know what, where we give back is, as we start up, as a startup, we have no time. And as we move through the years, and certainly for probably the first 10, 12 years, you don't have a lot of time. You're trying to get your feet under you in terms of the business, get it up, self-sufficient. And then it changes, then you can devote more time. One of the things I did, my office was not in the Whitby area where I lived, but I actually moved my office to Whitby at the risk of losing all my staff because it was about me. And again, I'm circling back, something I mentioned probably an hour ago, is wow, going into business is about you. It's about your lifestyle. It's about dreams and aspirations that you have. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was crazy. I was commuting 1 hour, 45 minutes every day. And I just said, no. And I moved the office to where I was so that it freed my time up. I would ultimately be the last person in, first person out, but I could walk to work. But that also gave me a sense of community, John, that you mentioned. You're now immersed in the community. Walking mm-hmm. to work is really unique. Not many people get to do that. And as you go through your community, you can see the changes that are happening. And what does that mean? How do you want to engage? And at, I did engage in the community at multiple levels, and it was very rewarding. But again, you know, the moons need to align. Your time, when the, if you're using the analogy of a car, your business goes into overdrive and it starts to cruise along. You can now engage at a higher level. So it does change over the years, and the give back becomes more and more if you're so inclined.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I think over the years, you'll realize why you're in business and what you're doing that for ultimately, right? But it takes a lot of reflection and a lot of mistakes, right? You're going to learn throughout your entire journey, and you'll probably have to pivot, and you'll probably keep making mistakes, and you're continually making mistakes. But as long as you're enjoying that whole journey and continue, you know, being happy, right? Waking up every day, really having a purpose in life, right? Purpose of why you're doing what you're doing. So that's great. So thanks a lot. So where can some of our listeners get to learn a little bit about your business or contact you?
Well, there's certainly you know, some of the theories I have in my book, Get More Life Out of Your Business. I mean, here it is. If we can see it here, just a quick plug on that. Alternatively, I have a podcast. It's called The Small Business Minute, and it usually runs anywhere. Originally at a minute, but people wanted more content. So it's up to 3-4 minutes, most of them. It's one idea, one business tip, very quick to consume because we're in that kind of society now. People don't want to spend a lot of time. Yeah. So it's 4 or 5 minutes max. Alternatively, go to my site, gregweatherden.com. The blog, the podcasts are also written there for those that prefer the written word. So that's probably the best place. If you see me at an event, register, participate, come up to me, and more than glad to have a chat with you.
Awesome. Well, I really want to thank you for being on our show today. Also, Roger, I want to thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Greg. Nice to see you.
You too, gentlemen. I absolutely enjoyed this. I hope your listeners find it worthwhile.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Greg.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to our latest podcast. Please subscribe to Local SEO Today and tune in to our next episode.